My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy and Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster.
That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Amen. No rains on the track when we unite and stick. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Amen. No rains on the track.
Hey, now it's the Mike and JD Show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert. And I'm joined, as always, by JD by Gotta Leave It. How you doing, JD?
Dude, school started this week. So yeah. I am back on the grind of teaching and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
My kids started school
this week. I saw. Yeah. That's a big moment. Kindergarten?
Yeah. As funny as she just learned how to ride her bike 2 weeks ago, and now we're riding bikes to school together.
Yeah. That picture was adorable. Like, I don't care that I heart pictures. Like, that's what parenting is all about, right there. That made me so happy to see that.
Yeah, yeah, it's a really, really cool experience. I took the week off so that way I can make sure to ride bikes with her every day this week.
That's awesome.
To school. So, but yeah, you know what? We were going to start on a somber note today, but actually, we got to pivot because we have a super chat.
Oh,
but we got a lot of news to talk about. There are big AEW announcements on the way. One was made earlier today, so we're going to talk about that. And then we'll talk about it, the inevitable big announcement that Tony Khan keeps teasing. He teased it again today. Talk a little bit of All In stuff, Lucha Brothers. And then I got a bunch of notes just from like small stories. And we'll see what we can get to. And then whatever we can't get to now, we'll try to get to later. But let's start it off with a Glassdoor Gamer, our favorite. And he is not burying Triple H this week.
Bummer.
Yeah. He said, how are you doing on your mortgage? Call Eazy-E. So did you hear about this story?
No, I did not.
No. So it came out earlier today. And I'm actually going to take a controversial, I'm going to have a controversial take on this. But
okay.
Earlier today, it was somebody broke the story. I think I saw it on Yahoo. BJ Bethel shared it.
Oh.
That Eric Bischoff is now a mortgage loan lender working for Conrad Thompson's company. So he's like, he's selling mortgages now. He went and got his license and everything. And people are ragging on him for that. And it's easy and fun to rag on Eric Bischoff because of all his failed businesses and all his bad takes on AEW. But I am not going to hate on a man who basically made a lot of bad business decisions, had to go bankrupt a few times. I'm not going to hate on a man for getting a new job, though. So I'm just going to say you're 69 years old and you're able to start a new venture. You're getting a new job and you're paying off all your debt and you're keeping your family afloat. I'm not hating on that. There you go.
I would be a hypocrite to make fun of somebody for changing careers, right?
Yeah.
I can't fault that. I did the same thing. I became a teacher 2 years ago. Where it is funny, where I will laugh,
yes,
is because this guy pretends like he's an expert in making money and stuff like that. And like, he's, you know, he's kind of broken two companies and gone bankrupt a couple times. Like, I mean, maybe this stuff isn't for him. And like, you know, sometimes you gotta, you know, pull back and do something. I mean, like, it's nice that he can leech off of Conrad and find himself landing on his feet.
Yeah.
And he can still make some Patreon money and sell some dumbass anti-Dave shirts and, you know, whatever. I can't fault the guy for making a living. I will fault the guy for being, for selling an image that isn't reality. But isn't that what a lot of people do on the internet anyway?
It is. And I don't know that he would be a guy that I would want to take advice from on taking out loans, considering like that's a huge investment. But Conrad today, he was getting in an argument with Rovert. I think Rovert is up on him in points right now, to be honest. Like, Rovert's not a guy that you really want to get into like a Twitter argument.
He will
go to the death with you. So like Conrad engaged him and I was like, man, he's a Conrad. You're punching above your weight class, bud, and you're pretty big. So,
please explain to me the, I'm not going back to read this, but I need you to give me the blow by blow of Conrad.
Okay. I would be remiss if I go to Rovert's Twitter page to pull up his tweets. Cause like, there's been a lot since then. I'm sure. Let me see. How do I spell his damn Twitter name? It's
SOD.
This is bad radio, guys. I apologize, but it popped right up because he follows me back. Let's see. He's been going on about this for a while, so I don't know that I could actually get back into it. But essentially, okay, so they went back and forth for a little bit, and Conrad corrected him. Shit, dude, I can't find the original one. Hold on. So, okay, here, I'm going to pull this up from Conrad.
Go for it.
This is pretty funny. I apologize to everybody listening. You're not, or I actually apologize to the YouTube audience watching me try to navigate, Rovert's Twitter, but he says, I know you hate him, man. So Eric Bischoff, who would lost his home due to bankruptcy, if not for Arizona bankruptcy exemptions, is selling mortgages, which is a pretty funny line, I think. And then he says,
wait, Arizona, if you live in the state of Arizona and you sell mortgages, you don't go bankrupt?
I don't know how that works, but
that's weird.
Yeah. Conrad says, I know you hate him, but come on, man. He lives in Wyoming and he paid off his BK. I'm thinking he's saying bankruptcy off years early, in part because of a refinance I did for him. So he's selling another mortgage on Twitter right now.
Yeah.
It's getting him a boatload and he couldn't believe it. Dude, he's actually actively trying to sell Rovert, I think, at this point. It's on great. Its own, he took classes and passed a test. I was impressed. He didn't walk away from any debts. He paid them all back early, which I said, you know, kudos, right? Yeah. Kudos. Like, you're working hard, make money, do whatever you got. Beat him up about Nitro or TNA or whatever you like, but this ain't the dunk you think it is. So, but they ended up going back and forth for a while.
I can't fault a man for refinancing his house, pulling the equity out of it to pay off a debt. That's kind of what you do.
Yeah.
I can make fun of him from getting those debts from, you know, believing his own, you know, smoking his own hopium, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, believe in his own bullshit, which kind of, you know, created the entire Eric Bischoff thing. Like, this is just the stuff, like I said, I'm not going to fault the man for this. What I will fault the man is where he's kind of created a cult around himself, right? Where people go to him like he knows what he's talking about. So, like, I want you to, like, think about that next time you proselytize Eric Bischoff and, like, act like this guy knows anything, quite frankly. And yeah. I also question you from buying a mortgage from the man, but that's just me.
Yeah. My thing is, I'm probably, unless he's telling me what not to do, I'm not really taking business advice from Eric Bischoff. Right.
Yeah.
No. Unless he's like, here's the mistakes that I made, and he lines them out. I wish I would have done it this way instead of this. I would listen to that, but he's not doing that. that's not what he does. Cause you have to have some type of self-reflection and accountability to be able to do that.
He might have that, but his online persona, this is what's funny. People can have Tony Khan's online persona all the time, but I mean, Eric Bischoff is the most obnoxious of the grifter folk.
Yeah.
Right. Cause he flaunts the success of Nitro while at the same time and lauds the Nitro book, which doesn't make him look good. Like, no. I know Guy Evans is his friend, but he doesn't come off good in that book. Like,
I think Guy Evans bought advertising space on ad-free shows, and that's why Bischoff was so nice to him. I don't know that for a fact, by the way. That's my theory on it, because I used to listen to their show, and they talked about that book every week. And they were, and I think they even had commercials for it. So
might have, I think they did actually. You know, like I said, I read the book. It's a good book. It's a really good book. I'm looking forward to the book he puts out where I have an interview in it because I'm excited about that. So he's a great researcher. I think the Nitro book is good. I think it's a great compendium to Death of WCW. I think you should read both for a balanced perspective. But in neither book does Eric Bischoff come off looking good. The only person that tried to make him look good is that Evan Husney dork who sold out all of his accrued interest in wrestling fandom to suck off Conrad's teat a little bit.
Let's get to the chat and then we'll get to somber news. Faustian Bargains.
Ooh, I like that name.
Yeah. Good evening, folks.
Good evening.
King of the North said, I'm here to check on Mike after that Aiyuk deal. Congrats, buddy. I'm pretty sure that was a fake story that went around. Like there was a fake story that the 49ers had re-signed Aiyuk. I think they're going to, but the story that he's referencing was from a fake Adam Schefter account. So now if somebody tells me that there's a real one out there, please let me know. And we will stop the show and then we'll do breaking news. But I think that was a fake one. Also here to make sure to check on JD, make sure he's sane. Eric Bischoff couldn't sell a bridge to a troll to live under. That's the thing about Eric Bischoff. Yeah. He was a very good salesman. That's how he got his job in AWA. That's how he got his job in WCW. That's how he took over WCW. He got his job in TNA by latching onto Hogan, but that's how he got his job in Hollywood with Jason Hervey. He was able to sell himself to all those people. So
say what you want about the man, but you can't say he's not a salesman. Like selling mortgages is like perfect for this guy. Like he is a salesman. Like he sold Hulk Hogan on WCW in an era where Hulk Hogan never should have come to WCW realistically from the financial shape the company was in. So like man can sell. Like you cannot question Eric Bischoff's ability to sell himself and to sell what he believes in. Like my dad, he's kind of a scumbag salesman.
Yeah.
God rest in peace.
Yeah. That is absolutely true. All right, now let's go ahead and start the show on a somber note. So we've got we have a jam-packed show tonight, but we're going to start it off. We did not get the opportunity last week to talk about the death of Kevin Sullivan.
No.
So he died, I believe it was last Friday. He passed away at the age of 74, which it was it was confirmed by Barry Rose. Barry Rose runs a really cool Championship Wrestling from Florida Facebook page that I happen to be a part of. And I get to interact sometimes with like Steve Kern and all these cats that are on there. So that's really cool if you guys ever check that out. But he shared the news on social media saying, with the heaviest of hearts, we were devastated to have to report the passing of Kevin Sullivan. May he rest in peace. May his family, friends, and fans find comfort in how much he was loved. And then I got a little story here. It says he was a monumental figure in the wrestling industry, both as an in-ring performer and a booker. His work from Championship Wrestling for Florida and later WCW is still talked about to this day. His health had been in decline since a severe accident in May, which led to complications, including sepsis and encephalitis. Despite his valiant fight, he passed away on a Friday morning. He was a wild character in the pro wrestling world, man. And I obviously was too young and I didn't really get Championship Wrestling from Florida where I was at. I didn't get to experience it till like later in life, but his Taskmaster gimmick, I thought that was a cool character in WCW, but I was not a fan of Dungeon of Doom, obviously, but I was a big fan of Kevin Sullivan.
Dungeon of Doom was some of the worst stuff of all time. When I became a fan in 92, like when I become a fan of something, like I go all in. Like, and I remember I was 93, I was looking for books on wrestling and I went to my local library and they had this book. I think it was George Napolitano wrote it. And it was all these, like, it was similar to what I just did for Gaijin, by the way, that should be coming out soon for everybody. You should be getting your Gaijin soon. It had all these entries, right? But it was from 1984. So it was written right when the boom happened. So there's a lot of characters. This is what I learned a lot about wrestling, was reading this book with all these entries that were at that point were already a decade old. And the one that stuck out the most to me was Kevin Sullivan. And I remember this is black and white picture and is this sawed off stocky dude with blood all over his face, holding a python and like have all this weird stuff. And it struck me. And I read about the character of Kevin Sullivan and I was fascinated by the Kevin Sullivan character. I've always had this weird fascination with the occult going back to the Geraldo Rivera Satanism special from 1988, which my parents did not let me watch because I was eight. And yeah. But the fact that I knew it existed and I got to invent in my head what it was, which is actually kind of worse. Yeah. So like I've always been fascinated with the occult. And then so the character of Ken Sullivan always intrigued me. And then I remember about 3 years ago when I was writing for WrestleJoy, you know, trying to bring some legitimacy to that page. I did this thing about Kevin Sullivan and Dusty Rhodes' feud, right? And I wrote about how Kevin Sullivan in the early 80s tapped into the satanic panic. For those of you guys who don't know, the satanic panic was in the early 80s. There was this fear, and it really kind of stemmed from the pop culture of the 70s, movies like Exorcist, Omen, right? There was this wave of like, ooh, Satan is existing in the world in the 70s. And by the 80s, the fundamentalists had latched onto this and were convinced Satanists had like infiltrated society. And there's a very famous trial of a daycare in California. It's the McMartin trial. And like these psychologists had implanted these false memories into these children that they had partaken in satanic rituals.
That's so fucked up.
This really happened.
I know.
It's a really good movie about it.
Yeah.
So, Kevin Sullivan, because it's wrestling, dude. Anytime wrestling exists, they're going to find the lowest hanging fruit and start grabbing. So in the midst of people freaking out, Tom Hanks is in this movie about how Dungeons and Dragons is killing people. Like, this legit shit. People are literally scared. Like
well, what's the name of the movie again?
I don't remember. It sounds like it's like an offshoot of Dungeons and Dragons. It was a made-for-TV movie. It's the shits. But you should see it because it's got Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks is really good in it, playing a Dungeons and Dragons player who's actually trying to murder people because I guess Satan told him to or some bullshit like that. Like, unbelievable. But, you know, because wrestlers are scumbags and they want to, like, exploit things. Kevin Sullivan tapped right into it. And he was such a weird, chemically experimental human being. That he was like quoting Carlos Castaneda and all of his like I've ate from the cosmic cookie. He would just sit there and babble, just complete bullshit. But he was so good at it that he made the perfect foil for Dusty Rhodes in the early 80s. Right? Dusty Rhodes is this good old boy, all-American hero, and he's literally fighting an emissary of the devil. And it's in Championship Wrestling from Florida, a pretty realistic promotion.
But yeah.
They didn't portray Kevin as being like supernatural. He was just fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, what do we got here? We got Alien.
Mazes and Monsters. Sorry.
There you go. Mazes and Monsters. I told you it was like a Dungeons and Dragons. Rebel. Nice work, by the way. Way to find that. Mazes and Monsters. You. It's ass. So yeah, then there's the McMartin trial movie on HBO, which is actually really good with James Woods and Henry Thomas. Quite a good film. I highly recommend that one. Just so you can get angry about how effed up the 80s truly were. Effed? What am I saying? How fucked up the 80s truly were. Yeah. So like, yeah, Kevin Sullivan just like embraced this demonic character and pretty much played a version of it the whole rest of his career. Like he toned it down when he went to WCW.
He made it like a cartoon version of that with the Taskmaster. Cause he had like the horns like kind of painted on, and he had like the yellow thing, and so it was like what you would see in like a cartoon movie or something like that.
The later Sullivan, yeah, but I mean, there's like the Games Master Kevin Sullivan, the WCW NWA character from the late 80s was similar to that, but a little bit different, a little bit more down to earth. Like one of my favorite things he did is the Varsity Club, man. The Varsity Club was these dumb jocks that got kind of like suckered in by a Satanist who was just kind of playing into it. It's
got manipulated by Kevin Sullivan. It was oddly enough, Bray Wyatt's dad. Mike Rotunda. And then it was Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and Rick Steiner.
Mm-hmm. And somebody else doesn't somebody else come in too? Wasn't there a fourth guy in the Varsity Club, or am I remembering that incorrectly? It's late. I might be remembering that incorrectly. But yeah, those are the three. Because again, they were all college athletes. They came out to the ring. This was Kevin Sullivan's idea, wearing their college letterman jackets.
Mm-hmm.
And it got Rick Steiner so over that he basically did it the majority of his career. Right? Mm-hmm. It became the Steiner brothers gimmick. Right? Was that they went to Michigan. Like, it just, Kevin Sullivan was a genius. He was definitely a flawed man. Definitely a flawed man. Definitely had his, pardon the pun, demons. But as far as a wrestling mind goes, I mean, like, you were better.
So one of my favorite memories, and Glassdoor Gamer, see your super chat, I'll get to you in a sec, because I think that's a really good question that's going to warm JD's cold, dead heart.
Oh.
yeah, it's good. And stay tuned for something more of that coming up this October on Patreon, I'm sure. But so one of my favorite memories, so I want to say in 2018, 2019 timeframe, I went down a rabbit hole in Smoky Mountain Wrestling on YouTube, because there's actually a playlist that has every episode of Smoky Mountain Wrestling TV on YouTube. Really? It's just like just one playlist, and it goes in succession, so cool. You can get all the storylines, and then it has like their special events, like the Bluegrass Brawl or whatever, like
Fire
like,
on the Mountain,
Fire on the Mountain, or whatever it's called, Thanksgiving Thunder. It has like the different ones going on, and so in I want to say 1992, or it might have been like early 1993 before Kevin Sullivan went back to WCW. He did a run in Smoky Mountain. And they did this really cool angle. It's one of my favorite angles that I've ever seen in my life. So they actually had like they were putting up pictures like around the arena that Smoky Mountain was being taped. And it was like, hey, if you see a guy dressed like this, beware. He's coming after Brian Lee, primetime Brian Lee. He's dangerous. He's got weapons. He's going to hurt people, this and that. And then they kept building up to this debut of this like mysterious person, right? In like this like hooded robe and all of this, you couldn't really make out his face. So this goes on. This had to go on for like 2 or 3 months. I could be exaggerating because my memory's a little foggy, but this goes on for a while, right? And then the guy, the dark, mysterious character, gets challenged by Brian Lee. Brian Lee's like sick of it, and he wants to fight him. So he goes into the ring, he challenges him, and the mysterious character comes out with a robe on. You can't see his face. They ring the bell. Kevin Sullivan takes off the robe, and it's him. And he just looks at Brian Lee, runs across the ring and starts stabbing him in the forehead with a fucking spike. It was so fantastic. And he just keeps stabbing him in the fucking head.
Fucking
boom, 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 boom. And then this is the kicker, right? Because there's the action, right? And then there's the selling of the wrestler. So Brian Lee sold it like he was dying, right? But what made it even better, you guys got to go fucking check this out. This is so fantastic. I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. Bob Armstrong, the commissioner of Smoky Mountain Wrestling, runs down to the ring, and he's got all the baby faces around him like that fucking idiot Tim Horner and all these other guys, right? He comes into the ring, right? And he starts doing chest compressions on Brian Lee to sell it, and he's like caving in this man's chest doing it. And as someone that has been in extra like hospital exercises where somebody with like that has like dummy strength, one time did chest compressions on me and like popped my sternum in two ribs. Like that shit actually freaking hurts. So I was like, oh my God, he's really caving in his chest with that. It was so fantastic. He didn't stay there very long, but everybody needs to just go check out that angle. It was beautiful.
There's so many cool characters. I mean, a lot of them are offshoots of this, and it always was how deep would he go? Sometimes he was a caricature of the demon character. Sometimes he was full on dark with that demon character. But I mean, he really, he's a predecessor to a lot of what Bray Wyatt, like, I don't think not enough people talk about Kevin Sullivan when they talk about Bray Wyatt. Like they'll give credit to like Waylon Mercy and all these other guys.
Bray Wyatt himself gave credit to Waylon.
Bray would, cause Bray gets it. But I mean, like a lot of the other people talking about, like some reason, like Kevin Sullivan, it's hard not to mention the Nancy Benoit stuff. That whole, I don't want to touch on that, cause that's all too grody for me. I don't want
to. We've already touched on that in a previous episode, so I don't think we need to go there.
I don't want to. This is like, we're talking about the character of Kevin Sullivan. Like, was definitely influential on the Bray Wyatt cult leader character. Except he was a little crazier, a little scarier, because he didn't, like, Kevin Sullivan never tried to convince you he was magical. He just thought he was.
Yeah.
Right? Which is what made him dangerous. Like, this is a guy that would run out. Like, if a 5'2" dude shows up in a robe, it's very clearly going to be Kevin Sullivan, if you know anything about wrestling. And it doesn't matter that it was not the best surprise. He tried to murder Brian Lee in the ring.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter.
I'll be honest, I did not know what was about to happen. I didn't know that it was Kevin Sullivan, because this is a small territory. True. I didn't know that Sullivan, because I was like watching all this stuff for the first time. And so it caught me by surprise that it was Kevin Sullivan. And then he just runs across the ring with a spike and you start stabbing him in the forehead. I was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. It was really fantastic. So yeah. I think everybody should go check it out.
I do too. I think you should go back and look at it and then check out like the Nitro run, right? The run of Nitro when it was really good was booked by Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah.
Right. Like, everyone fights to take credit for all that shit. The booker of record was Kevin Sullivan. Credit where it's due.
And a part of a booker's job is to manage talent, right? Mm-hmm. It's to take ideas, manage talent, and try to make everybody happy. Unfortunately, he was also put in a position where he had to do a lot of DQs and screw jobs and, you know, non-finishes and stuff like that. But he was dealing with some of the biggest egos. And I feel like he did a really good job for a long time, given the restraints that he had. So kudos to him. And rest in peace. Now, Glassdoor Gamer has a question. 70s Halloween or 80s Friday the 13th? JD, you are the horror expert here.
Truth be told, I hate slasher films, but I'll play along. The answer is Halloween. As always, Halloween. You're talking to John Carpenter. The problem with Friday the 13th is, what are you talking about? Because the original Friday the 13th is not what you think of as Friday the 13th. The original Friday the 13th is about a grief-stricken mother seeking vengeance on the counselors who allowed her son to die.
Yeah.
Very different than the hockey mask wielding axe murderer who's undead that we come to know and love, right?
Yeah.
Whereas the shape of Michael Myers was always fucked up. And let's be honest, Jason was just a ripoff of Michael Myers.
And 100%. I think people from, you know, I'm only a couple years younger than you, but I think people from like that grew up like a little bit later in the 80s, like their horror guy was Jason. And they just never knew that Jason was just a Michael Myers ripoff. And I learned that a little bit later. I was like, you watch the two movies, the original Halloween and the original Friday the 13th. And it's like, they absolutely just ripped off Jason, or they ripped off Michael Myers.
Eventually ripped off Michael Myers. It doesn't start that. It doesn't start that way. It just evolves into that.
Yes.
And that's the thing why Jason is so famous, because they just put out so many damn movies.
Yeah.
Right. They kept cranking out movies with him. And the Michael Myers sequels are all bad.
Yes.
They're all bad. Halloween 3 is an exercise in strangeness. I'll get into a tangent about that probably when we get around Halloween time. I'll talk about Halloween 3 Season of the Witch. But yeah, the answer is Halloween all day, every day, especially on Halloween.
Yeah. Let's see. So the answer to your question of who was the other varsity was Danny Spivey, was known as Waylon Mercy. Again, another connection to Bray Wyatt. I find that to be critical. Thank you, Everything Pro Wrestling. I thank you for the correction there. He also says he loved the Pillman feud. I thought the Pillman feud was great. Yeah. So was the Benoit feud. I know we don't really want to get into the Benoit stuff, but I loved that feud, and I loved the blow-off match for that feud. I thought it was fantastic.
I respect you, Booker Man.
Yeah, Io, thank you, says, I respect you, Booker Man. Yeah, That was really good stuff. All right, let's go to some more news here. So, I need to correct a report that came out earlier today. It was initially reported that WWE Hall of Famer Afa Anawai had passed away, but a little bit later after the announcement was made, we found out Afa is alive and fighting. He could be gone soon, but it appears he's fighting for his life right now. So, best wishes to the Anawai family. Man, we just lost. We just lost Sika, his brother, not too long ago, and now he's looks like he's in tough shape.
Yeah, it's the worst part about getting older is like you watch the people that you kind of grew up with all pass away, you know, and it makes you think about your own mortality, which kind of sucks. Like, I mean, we were too young to have appreciated like, you know, prime era Wild Samoans.
Yeah.
So I discovered Afa as a manager of the Head Shrinkers.
Me too.
So I don't have like the connection to the Wild Samoans. Like, I dig the SST, not so much the Head Shrinkers, but I like the Samoan SWAT team. What they were,
I thought Samoan SWAT team with like Paul Heyman as their man, I thought they were pretty badass,
freaking ruled. Yeah. Like, they just were, they work in that NWA style, that harder hitting. They got to be more athletic because, as we know, those Samoans are super athletic, that family specifically, super athletic, and they got to be. So, I mean, like, really didn't get to, I really never had that connection to the Samoans, but I mean, like, Afa's been kind of the kingpin. I know Roman's the tribal chief and whatever, but I mean, the family leader has been Afa for a long time. So, if and when he passes, it's going to be a sad day, but the man's legacy is all over the sport. So, you know, he's, the leader of wrestling's strongest family, you know, so it's a sad when it'll happen.
Yep. Hang in there, Afa. Hang in there, man. And prayers go out to the, obviously, the Anawai family.
The Anawai family.
Yeah. All right, let's shift gears now to some big news. So earlier this week, we actually talked about on Overtime. Let me give a plug for Overtime. Head to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. JD and I actually recorded on Monday night. We typically don't record on Monday night, but we did this week. And we actually did a deep dive into the feud between Bret Hart and Owen Hart. But during that show, we actually started off with a little bit of news, and we were talking about Tony Khan hitting Twitter and teasing some big announcements are imminent, the biggest in the history of the company, or the most important in the history of the company. Well, he had a big announcement today. He said All In 2025 is moving from London to Arlington, Texas. AEW announced that All In 2025 will take place at Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas, instead of Wembley Stadium in London. The decision comes, look, hitting the same stadium 3 years in a row, you're likely to see a major decline. I don't want anybody here to think that doing 55,000 in Wembley is a failure. It's not. It's still very freaking good. But they did 80 last year. They're about 55 this year. Next year, you're probably looking at another drop. It makes sense to do it in a different location. I completely get that. But they're bringing it to the U.S. Their ticket sales have not been great in the U.S. To be honest, I was thinking maybe if they were going to do it outside of London, they might go to another European city or something like that. But no, they're bringing it to Texas. They happen to kind of be a little bit of a big deal in Texas. They've been doing very well in Arlington, but we're talking like, you know, thousand tickets here and there. But you know what? It's ballsy. I think I like it. It's kind of an exciting time in the company.
They'll sell out this show. I know, like, they're not as hot as they were. They're a little cold right now. They got a year to heat up, but in reality, it's the first AEW stadium show, and they have a loyal fan base who does like to travel if given the opportunity and if motivated. So I think what this is going to do is it's going to challenge the fan base, and they're going to rally to it, and you'll get 55,000 in that stadium for it. So I mean, like, yeah, they're cold, but I mean, they'll put 55
in the stadium. They'll go balls to the wall. They'll do everything they can to try to fill up that stadium. It's going to be curious to see how much they set it up for, because that's a baseball stadium. That's not where the Cowboys play. It's where the Texas Rangers play. And they could probably set it up for 25 and it look really good.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to. I think they'll probably release 30 would be my guess on that first 30. Day. And then they'll try to go from there. They'll sell it out. I'm telling you this right now. I'm staking my claim. The AEW fan base will rally. They need, and that's part of the problem too, is this fan base, when they have something to rally around, they do. And the problem with having 12 pay-per-views, it's great for your pay-per-view sales. It's harder on your ticket sales because the pay-per-views aren't destination events anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like having All In and Wembley makes All Out in Chicago not as cool. It just is. Like, it's just not as cool. Like, I forgot I have tickets and I'm like, yeah, I guess I'm going. You know, like, it's tradition. But I mean, it's not exciting to go anymore. So like, but giving them a reason to be excited about something, and who knows what the main event's going to be? Who knows what the world's going to look like here?
Yeah. We talked about it earlier this year when we were just kind of like, we did some fantasy booking with Muse earlier this year. We talked about Will Ospreay's journey, and Muse on this show said that, no, you don't put him in the main event of Wembley this year. What you do is you build a one-year story arc, and then he gets the main event next year. Does that throw a little bit of cold water on that storyline that Tony Khan probably wasn't going to go with anyway, but that we really liked?
Yeah, and I said running Wembley 3 years in a row is really risky.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, I mean, like, but who knows? Maybe you don't do that show in Wembley. Maybe you go back and do a show at the O2 or, like, at Craven Cottage or whatever later in the year.
They did say that they're going back to London in 2026. I don't know that he said that he's going back to Wembley in 2026. Somebody might be able to correct me on that, but he did say London in 2026 for All In.
I think holding off on making Will the champion another 2 years might be a mistake, but I mean, like, they can go and do a show there. I guess you don't need to crown Will's first time in London. You know, it's fine. Like, whatever.
But I mean, but in hindsight, don't you think that maybe they should have just crowned him this year at Wembley?
No. Okay. No, I don't, because Swerve and Hangman is a really good program, and I think that to sell more
Swerve tickets, and Hangman's going to
I'm
Chicago. Sorry,
that's I'm a Chicago guy. Swerve and Danielson, I think, is a really good program. It's the hottest thing in the company right now. Like, in a company that's not drawing a lot, let's be honest, but this is a match that has interest. I think that you want 50,000 people doing yes, yes, yes when Bryan Danielson wins this match. I think that was the match to go with. Like, you talk to you talk to some people in the know, Will's not there yet.
I disagree with them. I think he is there, but I happen to just really like him. I think
I love him too, but I mean,
I think he's fantastic.
If you talk to people who know, like the minute by minutes, Will isn't there yet as far as like top draws in the company. I think this match with MJF, which is the former world champion, does a lot to help cement him. Right. I think, I think in a year, you're good. I think you could have put Will in the main event in Texas. Right. I don't think that's crazy.
Yeah, no, I think you could do that. I think All In now is like their biggest show of the year every year now. It's like their destination event. And so just because it's not in London doesn't mean you can't put him in the main event of the show. I think it would have been cooler if he was doing it in the main event of Wembley. But if you do in the main event of Wembley next year, you're probably looking at, you know,
20,
maybe 30. Maybe, you know, tops. 30
if you push. Yeah. Which is not a bad. Anytime you get 30,000 people, that's a good thing. But it's still 50,000 people less.
Well, and you're probably losing your ass on travel fees and rental fees and all that stuff.
I'm of the idea that if All In becomes their version of WrestleMania, where you can hit stadiums with this, I think it's bold. I think they're going to try really hard on this one. And if they can make this their show, their WrestleMania, like that's cool. I think they should plan for the main event right now.
Yeah.
Have in mind what you want for the main event right now and book a year backwards. Right. Yes. Yeah. Get yourself there. Start building to that show right now. Right. And I think in some ways, maybe they have been with Danielson's journey and stuff like that and swerves. But I mean, like, I don't think so. I mean, again, wrestling is a living, breathing organism as far as like a show goes. It's not like a book, it's not like TV show. Like, things can change. But I think you need, if you want Will to be the champion, say, okay, in the main event of this show, we want Will versus X. How do we get there?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I completely agree with you. And I think what they should do is they just call up John Muse. Mm-hmm. Be like, hey, you were on the Mike and JD show, and you said that we should wait till 2025 to crown Will. Okay, now how do we do it? And then John will tell them how to do it.
I agree with that.
I think that's the smart play, but if you're Tony Khan.
But if you're Tony Khan, you hire R.D. Evans instead, who's going to do some more trash by elegance stuff and the international wrestling provisional stupid bullshit championship. I can't stand that guy's work. Like him and Jimmy Jacobs and, you know, Pat Buck and all these guys. God, they could just flush them all down the toilet.
It's so funny how Jacobs and Evans left TNA and it quickly came out that all the shitty stuff was like their idea. Like
they knew it.
Look, guys. Yeah.
We talked about it on our show for years. Yeah.
And now TNA, like, like their ratings are never going to go up just because they're on Access, but ticket sales are fucking great. So, it's pretty funny. So he's been teasing a big announcement, one of the most important announcements in AEW history. King of the North brings up a good thing here. Earlier today, it was reported that it was the Sporting News Australia. Which was then quote tweeted and confirmed by Sean Rossap. Thank you, Sean. That AEW is looking at taking a pay-per-view to Australia. I don't think that's one of the most important announcements, but that appears to be something that they're interested in. Australian governments, like local governments, are actually paying wrestling companies to bring shows there. So that's smart. Like they paid TNA to go to fucking bumblefuck Wagga Wagga,
Wagga
Australia.
Wagga.
Yeah.
Wagga Wagga sounds silly, but it's actually like a real, like decently sized, like civilized city in Australia. Yeah. It just has an Aboriginal name.
Yeah. But a big things coming to Australia, maybe AEW bringing a show there. But cool. What are we thinking that this most important announcement imminently happening is? What are we thinking?
It's gotta be the TV deal.
yeah. It's gotta be.
Hopefully it's signed because Zaslav, he's gotta be a dead man walking. He's gotta be.
People think that his job's safe. Did you read The Observer last week?
He
quoted one of the like entertainment trade journals.
Really?
And said that like it's like people that are saying that his job is in danger, they don't really understand the dynamic of that company and that his job's probably pretty safe.
Crazy to me.
Yeah.
Good for Tony.
Yeah, absolutely. Hold on, Superman Bass Fisher. I'll get to you in just a second. I appreciate you for dropping a super chat. It has to be that television deal. Like it has to happen at any point now. And BJ Bethel was on Twitter earlier, and he did a poll. He said, "What do you think that their annual rights fee is going to be?" And he put like, you know, 120, and then he did like 130, and then he did like 150 to 170, and he said 180 to 200. I voted 150 to 170. What say you?
180.
You're going above 180.
I think it's about 180.
And then at that point, I mean, that essentially like sets them up for the next decade, basically, to where they can now like be comfortable. That, and it doesn't matter if they get the 180 million a year, the fact that they're not getting a billion a year like WWE, people are going to think they're a failure no matter what. You know, sure, what I mean? So they're going to move those goalposts by, oh, well, they failed. And that's not the case. They're actually going to be a sustainable company that's profiting and a hugely successful company at that point.
Yeah. I mean, then the job is done. You introduced a challenger brand that's going to last and will outlast WCW. You've already outlasted the Nitro era. Like, mission, you want to say mission accomplished, but it's got to be okay. Like, yeah, you can not ease off the brake, but now you can like not worry about fighting to survive.
Right. Now you can breathe a little bit. Yeah. But don't say mission accomplished. I don't want you to George Bush yourself. All right. Superman Bass Fitcher has a great comment here. He said they should go somewhere WWE hasn't been. Go to Rio. I kind of like the idea of trying to work cities that WWE really doesn't go to very often to try to carve out their own, you know, sites and territories.
Well, I think WWE has been to Rio. Isn't that where JBL or Chris Jericho got in trouble? Something like that. Like
So they've done house shows there, but I don't think they've ever done a pay-per-view there. Although Pat Patterson did win the Intercontinental title there in a tournament in 1979, a very legitimate one.
As did Buddy Rogers in 1963. People forget about that. So I have this crazy theory with Mike. I think that they're running a show in Champaign, Illinois next week. They're running Dynamite in Champaign, University of Illinois, about 3 hours from me. I forgot. Champaign is a very small market. Like I said, it's about three and a half hours from Chicago proper. In theory, if you had a Zane Bresloff out there really running the market and really trying to sell tickets, you could do what you're talking about. But they don't.
No.
They just don't.
So AEW Dynamite and Rampage on, I sent this to our group chat earlier. Mm-hmm. On Wednesday, August 28th, they currently have 1,000 tickets out, 1,005 tickets. The current setup is for 1,830 tickets. So we're still 2 weeks out. They could sell those, but that's gonna be tough. Like you're that's almost like half that they have left to go. 13 days until the show in 2019, they were in that same venue, in December 4, 2019, and they sold 4,100 tickets
in Champaign, yeah. And so in central Illinois, like that's impressive. And so that's the same arena we had the state wrestling tournament at. And the fact that the IHSA State Wrestling Tournament is going to outdraw Dynamite is mind-boggling to me. But as is the reality we're living in, I think that if you're going to run, I don't think running smaller markets is a bad idea. I think if you're going to do that, you've got to have your street team, man. You've got to be pounding the pavement to get asses in those seats. I just don't think they have that guy, that Zane Bresloff, who can make that work, and that's disappointing. Dumbly Hall is a cool place too.
Yeah. No, they definitely, you know where they could sell a lot of tickets?
Where's that?
Honolulu, Hawaii. I guarantee you. And me and my boys here on the base, you know, we'll do a military campaign. We'll get, you know, 8,000 in the Blaisdell Arena in downtown Honolulu. Let's do it.
I imagine it costs a fortune to run a show in Hawaii.
Oh, it does. That's why when Bellator came, they would do two shows. They would run back to back nights because they're like, look, if we're going and we're taking our entire production team, we're gonna get our money's worth.
So, do the whole thing. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, they absolutely would. But yeah, lots of things coming down the pike for AEW. We'll keep on this TV deal news. I get the feeling that it's gonna happen any moment now. Now let's talk about the Lucha Brothers. So earlier this week it came out that they are essentially like earmarked for WWE. They have stopped talking to AEW, basically. They're on their way to WWE. But Pentagon Jr. Came out saying that this is all fake news because he's still under contract and so is his brother. And they don't want anything to mess up their deals there, and they don't want to get in trouble. So According to Fightful, Penta has been dropping hints that he's had conversations with WWE over the summer. He's aiming straight for the main roster with Phoenix by his side. WWE is reportedly more than happy to bring them both on board. But here's where it gets interesting. Penta has publicly dismissed these rumors as fake news, yet sources close to him say he mentioned being in Orlando this week, which is where the WWE Performance Center is located. Also where Disney World is, so maybe he was going to Disney, who knows. But he had a booking in Mexico on Thursday as well. Meanwhile, over in AEW, it sounds like they're scrambling to keep the Lucha Brothers on board. AEW reportedly offered them a new deal that's competitive with what WWE is offering. Penta, however, is keeping everyone guessing. He even took to social media to say, no more gossip. My present is AEW. So, yes, his present is in AEW. It's because he's currently under a contract. This whole thing is starting to become a little bit of a dumpster fire with the Lucha Brothers.
I don't know. I mean, this is kind of what happens when you have a competitive market for talent.
Yeah.
Right? Guys go out of their way to get the best deal possible. Good for Penta.
Yeah. Well, I just mean like, you know, the fake news and trying to deny that he's been talking with WWE. But
that's what everyone does. Remember when Oakland was like, I'm not going, I'm retired, I ain't doing nothing. And then, you know, that's just what they do.
Yeah.
Now maybe he doesn't want time tacked on because Phoenix has been injured a bunch. Because
yeah.
I do think maybe they think the value is in the Lucha Brothers and not in Penta and Phoenix on their own. I don't agree with that, but there could be thought that that is where that is, that that is where the money is. So if you piss Tony off on this, all this, like, oh, you don't want to even talk to us? Oh, you got, maybe you have 6 more months left on your deal. I don't like that, but that's the game the other side plays too. So, you know,
that's the game they're in, and he's tacked on time for other people. So wouldn't surprise me if he did that to them. Now, a lot of people are saying that he's doing this to avoid contract tampering charges. Guys, they are not in a collective bargaining agreement here. There's no collective bargaining between WWE and AEW. So, therefore, this is not the NFL. This is not baseball, where teams, under the construct of their league, have an agreement in place that they will not negotiate with a player on another team while they're under contract to said team. If they do, they're subject to fine by the league that they're under. There's no such thing as a contract tampering charge for privatized companies, unless AEW and WWE enters an agreement to do as such, which they never will do. Could it be considered tortious interference? I think that's a stretch.
Maybe.
I think they could try to go for that. MLW successfully did that to WWE when they were essentially negotiating with guys that they had under contract, and so they were sent cease and desist letters.
Ring of Honor, too.
Ring of Honor did the same thing. So I just don't know what the label is, but it's not contract tampering. That doesn't exist in pro wrestling. You can you can talk to whoever you want, but what you can't do is say, if you don't go to them, here's what I can offer you. You have to wait till the contract expires.
Mm-hmm. Chris Jericho talks about it very famously in his first book. While he was under contract at WCW, he had a dinner with Vince McMahon at his house and was eating brownies, and they were talking about stuff. So I mean, like, This is nothing new. This happens.
Yeah, and both sides are doing it. That's why you'll see WWE stars on the day after their contract. Like, didn't it happen with Malakai Black? Happened with Malakai. Like, the day after he was available, he showed up on Dynamite when WWE still thought he was under contract, but there was like a loophole where it was like a 30-day versus 90-day non-compete.
Correct.
He just showed right up. They were talking during that period. It's like, and they were legally able to do so. So this is not a big thing.
Nope.
Yep. All right, but yeah, they're definitely going. They're definitely going. WWE news. Not really much. Randy Orton signed in for 5 years.
All cool.
Right. Yeah. Did anybody think he was leaving? I don't think anybody thought that he was leaving. Chad Gable also, he said that his extension that he signed earlier this year is for 3 years. So he will be with them for 3 more years. So there you go. Your boy, Chad Gable. Hey, you know who else is doing really fucking good right now that I think you should take a look at is your boy, Tavian Heights. I don't know what his real name is.
D'Angelo Hancock. G'Angelo Hancock.
Yeah. Gee, I've been watching some clips and highlights of him in the N1.
He's a natural.
Dude, he looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
He could be a guy.
He was our best U.S. Greco wrestler, and then he got in an argument with USA Wrestling and was like, I'm out. and then sign with WWE. So it's they're getting a guy who's really, really good. And I like see, like I said, I love seeing these guys, these my guys, my blood, my yeah. wrestlers succeed here in this. And it's just it warms my cold dead heart.
Yeah. Did you see the video of him suplexing a sumo wrestler?
I did not.
He went on a sumo mat for shits and giggles, and he actually beat the guy. I just can't spell Tavion Heights. How the hell do I spell? I'm trying to find the video.
Tavion, I think it's T-A-V-I-O-N.
I-O-N. Again, old guy using Twitter, and plus my keyboard is not lit up.
Remember the Heights?
Keyboard's not lit up, so it's okay. Here, I
talk to an angel.
It's it actually comes right up. It's so funny.
Let's see.
What's that?
Put it up. Put it on the thing.
I'm gonna bring it up.
Okay.
He just throws the guy. What a legend.
Greco, baby. He's one of our best Greco guys. It's all upper body. It's all about having amazing hips and hip hop. This is why these guys translate well to pro wrestling. Takeshi Sugiura was a Greco guy in Japan, had a great career in NOAH, speaking of the N1. Chad Gable, Greco guy, transitioned really well to pro wrestling. Like, it just, because Greco is all about hips and popping and souping people. It just, the translation is so easy. Like, it's so easy. I love seeing it. God, I love it.
Yeah. Guys, this weekend on Brace for Impact, I'm going to be talking about tonight's episode of TNA Impact, where the main event was one Nick Nemeth versus Josh Alexander. They went to a 30-minute draw, apparently. Spoiler alert. And now they're being set up for a Iron Man match coming up at Emergence here soon. So if you want to hear my takes and listen to Brace for Impact, head over to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJD Show. Now let's get to the chat, because we've already burned through all the topics. Let's see. King of the North says, "Oh my God, the day Dynamite passes Nitro's number of shows will be a movie. It should be a celebration.
Should be."
Superman Bassfisher says, "It's Ricochet. Who is Ricochet, sir? I know who he is, but like, and what are we referencing?" I think he's going to be in that Casino Royale or whatever the fuck they're doing it all in. Yeah.
Prince Puma.
But yeah. Hawaii residency. I think that would be a great idea. I think that they should cater to me. Absolutely. Everything Pro Wrestling says, Conan talking wild, and they know WWE doesn't need another lawsuit like MLW. Yeah.
Carlos gets himself in trouble sometimes with that big yippity mouth of his. So
yeah,
his shows suck. He should think about booking better.
Hey, why are there 10 Triple Manias every year now? Then there used to just be one, yeah. And now they're just doing them like every other week.
Not allowed to question Conan. He's a genius.
Yeah, I guess they don't want to burn bridges like Stephanie Vaquer did. Assumingly, I think those bridges are getting burned. I think Conan's putting some ideas in the Lucha Brothers' heads, man, and they're not doing it. So,
I don't think it's a bad thing either. I'm fine with them going to WWE. They've been in AEW for a long time. I don't, you know, if you're not going to push them both as singles guys, I think it's okay for them to go.
Yeah, King of North says that I need an extra large font keyboard. I think I just need one it's not lit up. It's a dark keyboard because it's underneath. I have like a standing desk attachment. And my keyboard's underneath that, and I can't see because my lights are off. Because I'm trying to make it like get the ambiance in my nursery that I do my fucking podcast out of. Dobby says, when they announced Tavion as an Olympic wrestler, the sumo dude looked over and was like, what now? Yeah, he got announced as Greco-Roman Olympic wrestler, and the sumo looked at him like he shit his pants or he shit his diaper or whatever he's wearing.
Because he's probably not, I assume he's not, realistically, he's probably not that good of a sumo wrestler. He's probably just okay. Yeah. You know, right. And then they busted out a legit Olympian in Greco, and he just tossed him, which is awesome. Loved it.
Yeah. And he says he's been progressing at rapid speed on NXT. Looked great on TNA. He did look really good at TNA not that long ago. And has been killing it in NOAH for the N1. Yeah, the guy's getting high marks. I think that he's probably, like, their next guy.
He's probably what they wanted Gable to be, but Giangelo has always had a bigger personality than Gable. I don't know if he's like, they're both good athletes, but Gable's style of wrestling was it's freestyle. Yeah. He was very much leg attacks, very big on the snap down. Like, whereas Giangelo could wrap his hands around dudes and just pop his hips and launch people. So, I mean, yeah. Like, I think just the natural abilities are just, they're more in his favor. And they probably spend a lot less on Tavion Heights. You know, that wins above replacement. You want to make sure you respect that.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of Gable, his brother Bobby is now a free agent this week. Do you see him getting picked up by AEW?
No, but I could see them kicking the tires on him.
You would think, right? I mean, he's a good enough athlete.
He's a good athlete.
Yeah,
I could see. I don't know if let's see how real this Ring of Honor thing is.
Yeah,
maybe
because there's rumors out there that Ring of Honor might have a TV deal. So
there's we have heard that. Honestly, I'd rather see him in TNA, but I don't know if. I don't know with the new TNA deal, if that's really what they want, he wants. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that the next time TNA is in Florida, if he's still available, they'll probably bring him on. Cause they brought that guy. They brought out that guy, Zion Quinn, Mr. Harley Cameron. They kicked the tires on him. He had a match over the weekend.
Lucky man.
Yeah. So, I think that he'll probably get a shot there, but right now they're not doing the thing right now where they're grooming young talent at this point. They're grooming young NXT talent. Like they're like NXT sending over their guys and TNA's beating them, but they're making them look good at the same time. It's weird. Like Charlie Dempsey wrestles Jonathan Gresham next week. I assume that's a pretty good match. But like you could hire your own people to do some of that stuff. So, but they're trying to, they're in the early stages of this relationship.
Yeah. So the NXT guys are getting reps and getting better and the TNA guys are.
Well, they're just not bringing in as many young guys now. And like,
yeah, unsigned I get
people
it
because they're filling out their cards with NXT talent.
I get it. I just, it's strange to me. I hear this and I go, oh, WWE's working out. It's working out better for WWE in the long run. Huh? Shocked to hear that.
Right now, it's working out great for TNA because Joe Hendry is about as over as they get, and their crowds are up.
Yep, they're going to be up. Yep, sure. He's training at the NXT training center. I'm sure he's going to be long-term with TNA for the next decade. I'm sure in 10 years, we're going to talk about that epic TNA run that Joe Hendry had with the world title.
Yeah, he's probably going to be their biggest star for years to come. Like, I don't see an issue. I don't see an issue with having, like, the handsome mailman just sitting in your house with your wife all day. No big deal. Just no big deal. All of a sudden your kid's like delivering packages at like 3 years old, just like naturally.
That was good. Good sell on that too. Appreciate it. I like it.
Yeah.
Oh shit. Yeah.
But no, I can't hate like what TNA is doing, but I was like, they had like this guy Riley Osborne on the show tonight, and I'm like, that's not a real person.
Is that an NXT guy?
He's an NXT guy. And then last week they had Dante Chin, who looks like he might have a little bit of talent, but he's a bit green.
So TNA is now the midway point between Level Up and NXT proper.
And these guys are not getting like several matches. They're just like TNA's, like they're sending guys in for shots at TNA.
Like shots. Well, looks, yeah. Not even
like Charlie Dempsey looks like he's sticking around a little bit because they brought him back. This is like his third set of tapings that he's doing. And he worked Jonathan Gresham. Spoiler alert for all of you guys that are TNA fans. I apologize for this, but Jonathan Gresham beats him, but apparently they had a pretty good match. So it's like they're bringing them in. They're not like putting them over and stuff. They're like, they're sending them out to lose to all these people, but and they're doing the same thing with Noah. Look, they sent Josh Briggs and Tavion Heights to Noah, and I haven't really heard anything about Josh Briggs other than King of the North's complaints about him. But I Tavion Heights is actually seemingly doing pretty good. So it's a really weird thing, and it's so new. I just don't know what the hell to make of it at this point.
I don't think anybody knows. I don't think they know what to make of it at this point.
Yeah, yeah. But because they've been filling out their cards with NXT talent, we have not seen them use anybody from AAA or New Japan in a while. And I'm like, I wonder when this thing's going to kind of slow down or what, man. So I don't know what this is, but I'm going to be talking more about it coming up this weekend on Brace for Impact. But guys, I think that's going to do it for us this week. We actually, for the first time in a while, we made it under an hour. It's getting late where JD is at, so we're going to call it a show. Head over to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. Make sure you become a subscriber there. Click the like button. Make sure you're a subscriber to this YouTube channel. And as always, give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. I would greatly appreciate it. JD, you got anything to send them home with?
Should be a new episode of our new edition of Killing the Town. tomorrow on the Patreon. Highly recommend you come back with that.
And yeah.
Other than that, I'm just trying to get my feet underneath me with school starting again, and I'm feeling good about stuff. And then I want to keep knocking things out. I want to get back into writing more. So hopefully cool. I can keep providing content for the Patreon because I'm enjoying doing it again.
Cool. All right, guys. Until next time. Mahalo.
Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Ain't made no way from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.